Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 252. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with the lovely and talented Tim Elliott.
Well, thanks, Steve.
And
good to be here.
A secret fan of Obama, Graham Thickens.
In your dreams, bucko.
And a guy who is still trying to figure out his palm trio, Mr. Phil Wilson.
That is not true. I've got that figured out.
Oh, so you guys who are listening, you can probably see or hear that. You can probably hear that Phil is at some event, so he's calling in remotely.
Yes, I am.
And where are you?
So just more remote than normal. I'm at Google Dev Fest, which is happening at St. Thomas today, downtown Minneapolis. So I had a chance to come out and hang with developers because, you know, I am the quintessential developer.
You're a hardcore coder.
Developer groupie.
That's what they call me, Phil Coder Wilson. That's me. It's a very exciting day today. We've got some great stuff planned happening on a lot of Google-centric technology, including Android and web apps and cloud and things like that. So and a lot of our friends are speaking here this weekend as well. And I notice it's getting louder and louder as I speak to you. I think that there was a light that went on that said, Phil's on Skype. Start talking louder. So,
I think you should have foreseen this, and you should have brought a gigantic blanket that you could have covered yourself. So you'd be in a little tent.
You know, the only other option would probably be to go into a stall in the bathroom, and that's just not
we can't have that.
That reminds me once of being in an airport, in the Minneapolis airport, and some guy's phone rings in the stall, and he goes, guys, can you not speak for a second? Because I'm taking this call. And he goes, hello. And immediately everybody flushes. It was just hysterical. Anyway.
Now, wait a minute. I believe that is the fourth telling of that story, that little story that we've heard that, Steve. I'm not sure.
Okay.
It is. But so you've done that one for the year.
But it's just like my dad. Okay, it's like my dad. He has to tell the same. He had to tell the same stories 35 times to make sure that we remembered them.
But I think it's important to note that it is our greatest hit. So I think it should come back every once in a while.
Why, thank you, Phil. So I got to know, Graham, did you go to that Seth Levine talk?
Oh, I absolutely did. Yeah.
And?
It was great.
So first tell everybody who Seth Levine is.
Levine is a partner in the Foundry Group, a Boulder, Colorado VC firm of some renown. And we were lucky enough to get him to come to town finally, something I've been trying to accomplished for years, actually. But what brought him to town is, you know, they finally made an investment in a Minnesota company last fall, or whenever it was. Wasn't it about November or something like that? Lead Pages. So he was in town for a board meeting, and Lead Pages, Clay Collins, convinced him to stay and speak to a gathering of startup folks on the topic of startup communities, which is a book that his colleague Brad Feld wrote a year or so ago. It's about building an entrepreneurial ecosystem in your city. So it's been quite popular. It sort of plays off the early days of the Boulder community, how they've built such a great tech ecosystem there, and the TechStars accelerator program that began there. And so Seth was here to tell us all about how we can get some of that Boulder mojo. And he had some good things to say.
Did he suggest that we build some mountains around us and...
you know, and have parades with naked people on bicycles through downtown.
Yeah,
that would do it. But no, he actually had some, I don't want to say harsh things to say, but one of them, which I'll put up on a link, was about how to build a successful community, you need people that are much more into giving than taking. So that jumped out at me right at the beginning. And so that's a message to all you takers out there. You know, you got to get with back. The program, you know? Yeah. He stressed the point that they can't take credit for what's going on in Boulder, that it really started years ago with a meetup that I think, I want to say it's maybe even a weekly meetup. It's at least a monthly meetup. And I forget what it's called, first Tuesday, first Thursday, or something like that. And it's just amazing how people come together to support each other, particularly startup founders.
Yep.
So he drew a big crowd. I mean, they had 100 tickets. Tech.mn put up the Eventbrite site, and 100 tickets went quickly. And I think even more showed up. There were some gate crashers and waitlisters that were let in. And it was at Worrell Design in Northeast, which has quite a nice big room. It's kind of a photo studio, high ceiling, kind of a room that easily accommodated 100 plus. And there was lots of beer and no food, which caused me to have to bail a little early because it was a long 4 hours. But but it, you know, it went from like 6 to 9, and a very good event. Lots of great questions. Clay Collins did a onstage kind of sit down interview of Seth, and did a great job. So Seth's really plugged into the local community now. Has met a ton of people, and he went to school at McAllister, so he had a lot McAllister friends there too, including one fellow that works at Pearson here in Bloomington, who I've met before, and other people that have been to their events out in Boulder or in Denver area, Defrag and Glue, which I go to every year. You know, there were people from Minnesota that had been at those events that were there. It was pretty much all the startups you would expect there were in attendance. So it was a great event. I hope he comes back. I'm sure he will.
Have you had a chance to read his book?
Which one? Startup Communities?
Startup Communities, yeah.
I have it, and I've scanned it. It's a fairly quick read. Brad's done a number of books, and you know, the one prior to this called Do More Faster on the Techstars concept is another great book that, you know, you can practically read it on one flight, you know.
Yeah.
I have them both. I get them when I go to these events, and you know, I've interviewed these guys in the past, and they're amazingly successful investors, and they continue to invest nationally. They obviously don't just invest in Boulder, although they have a ton of Boulder-based companies in their portfolios, and I think they're on their fourth fund now. They're very active investors in internet companies.
Yep.
Startup Communities is an excellent book. Do More Faster is another great one. I think he's just coming out with another one on how to work with your boards, how startups can best work with their boards of directors. So obviously Brad is a very prolific blogger and author, and Seth has become, you know, one in his own right too, you know, taking the blogging lessons from Brad, I guess.
Yeah.
He's a great guy.
Did you have a chance to do a video interview with him?
I didn't, because I backed off to allow him to talk to more.
Hello? Hello?
Looks like Graham left the building.
Gosh, if you counted all the questions afterwards, it could have been an hour and a half. And I have yet to see that posted, but I was going to, put that into my little blog post that I did announcing the event.
Yep. Well, we lost you there for just a second, but I'm assuming you were saying about video of the onstage interview, right?
Yeah. The whole the whole thing was videoed, and it's got to be an hour, hour and a half long, counting the questions at the end, wow. of which plenty. So I suspect that or an edited version thereof will be posted soon.
Yep.
But no, I didn't try to do an interview. I, you know, he was so busy talking to so many guys. I've interviewed him multiple times. And so I left that alone, and just kind of hung in the back and took it all in. And, so it was the second week in a row where we had a pretty big active, startup event with, Beta MN the week before.
Yep.
And now mini demo coming up next week, so it's kind of going to be a trifecta for the startup crowd this month.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, Tim, are you on?
I'm here.
So you put this link in here about that the Target hackers used IDs from a refrigeration contractor to get into the Target network. And
I put that in for a couple of reasons. One is that it appears that their air conditioning systems are sort of like smart things where they work with some sort of internet access. So are you worried that your smart things are going to get hacked?
Well, actually, no, I'm not, because I know what the security model is for smart things. But what's just stunning to me is that they didn't have their payment systems cordoned off on their network.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the bat on Target.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seems like once you have access to the network, you're able to do whatever you wanted, get whatever data you wanted, which is not good.
No, not good at all. No,
they should have had that in its own separate tunnel and, encrypted.
Don't you find this very exciting? It's very exciting to see how this keeps unfolding for Target. They just keep having so much fun with this whole thing.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, I was thinking that this refrigeration company, which is based in Pittsburgh, they're not going to do any more business like this. You know, this is horrible PR for them.
Well, I would disagree, only because they are not at fault. I mean, it's the internal network that was open. You know, the doors were open. Now, granted, they got compromised, but we don't know how the hackers got into the how they got the information from this contractor. Now, to the point, though, if it's discovered that the contractor, hired Joe Schmedlap, and Joe came in, and Joe's actually a Ukrainian, hacker, and, he went to work for him or something, maybe then, but I don't know. But it really is a problem, though, with Target's network being so wide open. So
they're definitely going to have to fix that.
You think?
Yeah.
You think? I did want to jump ahead. I'm going to have to get off here pretty soon just so I can see what's going on in the keynote speaker here at DevFest. But I did want to mention that I saw this this piece this weekend or this week from that a local firm is accepting Bitcoin payments now. And the Menermade,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's I gotta tell you,
accepting
that's
Bitcoin.
Success. You got PR and Minivate for it, because it's really not a story.
Yeah,
I know.
Well, it's really not.
I was going to suggest that all the donations that we get should come in. We should start accepting Bitcoin.
Okay, sure.
There you go.
Yeah. Right.
So we won't really have to worry about that much then, is what you're saying.
Well, all I can say is that since my level of trust in the United States economic system is lower than it was just a few years ago, my confidence level in Bitcoin is not high enough yet for me to start to move too fast into that realm. Although, you know what? Yeah. If you start to look at what's happening globally, and then that there needs to be a non-state-based currency, it does make more sense. It's just that, there's too much behind it that we don't know about. That's my big issue with Bitcoin.
That's exactly true. Right. It's still, and again, as much as they tried to explain it on their website, it's a very difficult thing to to actually figure out.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
hey,
now, before, wait a minute, how am I doing this again?
Before you go, is anything happening with Mobile March? Like, are you going to have a schedule up or anything? Or
yes, there is, but I also want to talk about the one thing that isn't on the list. I wanted to kind of give you a quick little background on the JMU 612 talk we had.
I saw a photo, marketing. Yeah.
Yeah, we did that on Thursday at the Urban Bean. JMU 612 is just a Java meetup, and it was a nicely attended event, and had a chance to be on the same panel actually with Bjorn Stansvik, who is also is the CEO of MentorMate. Is he the founder of MentorMate, CEO of it? He's the poobah of MentorMate.
Yeah.
And also Jamie Erickson from Software for Good. And I think it was really a nicely attended event, and we had a great time. And the one takeaway that I had came from Jamie Erickson, other than the brilliance I was spewing, of course. But the thing I took away from Jamie Erickson at Software for Good is he said that he's very excited about where mobile is heading, especially from the concept of connected devices and that ability to become a heads-up society once again, which I thought was really kind of I hadn't heard that before, so if somebody else has already coined that phrase, but I thought that was really very interesting, this because we've become a heads down society looking at our phones or our mobile devices, and now these peripherals are allowing us to move into a more heads up society. So
yeah,
I don't know what you guys thought of that.
Well, you know what,
well, I'm leaning in and keeping my head up.
Yeah, there you go. You're gonna write a book.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So what we're saying,
I'm going to try to put every buzzword together that I can.
So what we're saying is chiropractors have a very bright future of all this leaning in and heading up and heading down, right?
Exactly. And as we fall into fountains while we're looking at our phones.
Exactly.
So, I just have to tell you something real funny is the JMU 612.
612.
612, sorry.
That's okay.
Right when that came out. I was talking to somebody at a social media breakfast who said, hey, there's a new Java programming language meetup that's going on. I said, no, that's not what it is.
No, it's a coffee thing.
It's a coffee.
It's a coffee thing. But just briefly before I do head off and gather all sorts of tasty tidbits on DevFest here in downtown Minneapolis at St. Thomas, I do want to let you know that there'll be the official announcement press release coming out. We'll look for the piece in Minnovate next week. But we at Mobile March have selected our two keynote presenters this year. We usually have one keynoter and that have a full day of sessions. But this year we have two. And one we know very well, but probably somebody you don't necessarily know, Jacqueline Crowhurst, Senior Director, Central Region Developer and Platform Evangelism at Microsoft, will be kicking off the event. And she'll be talking about winning with mobile. And then the afternoon, right after lunch, is sort of the anchor for our new connected device track. Zach Cipolla from Spark will be presenting a keynote presentation as well. So we're trying to give an idea of, highlight that what we consider the future, the natural future of mobile, which is that connected device piece. And I think Spark and what they're doing with the Spark Cloud and Spark Core and all they're doing will be a very interesting speech as well. So, but also we'll have all sorts of really great stuff with four different tracks of learning, development and design, a strictly development track. We'll also have a mobile business track and then the connected device track. So look for that. That's a
breaking news here.
And I'm really interested in this connected device track, so I'm going to be anxious to see what that's all about.
There you go.
Yeah, no, I think that, this is jumping ahead a little bit, but John Gruber had a good piece on Microsoft, and at the end he talks about how they could really win, which is not as a device company, for, say, mobile devices, but as a cloud company that connects all of devices, no matter what manufacturer or operating system they're using. And I thought that was a pretty astute comment. So having Microsoft there along with, others that are making that glue between devices, I think is It's very forward-looking, Phil.
Well, I think, you know, we were very anxious to talk with the folks at Microsoft, obviously because of, you know, the big transition that they're going through right now, which, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about. I'm sure you guys will talk a little bit more about on after I'm gone on, about the new CEO. And one of the things that we did want to make sure is that Jacqueline was able to speak to that, because there'll be a lot of questions about, you know, the company direction and the new CEO. But also, I think that Microsoft is evolving, as you said, Tim. So I think that there's some new things to be learned from that perspective as well.
Indeed. What if Microsoft adopted Android as their mobile operating system, as one scenario?
I think it's got some great potential.
Absolutely.
Because we know they can't adopt iOS, is there?
right. But they now that they have Nokia, they could build some killer devices that would really take on Samsung and HTC head to head.
Yeah.
What's the old saying about flying monkeys out of your butt? What's that one?
Oh.
It's very possible. I think it's very possible. It would be brilliant, but we'll see.
You know, Steve, you could support Tim on this. You really could.
I could.
Hey, I said that my prediction was the new Microsoft CEO would get their mojo back and they would come resurge. And geez, if they did something like that, that would be this. It would piss off a lot of developers who
it's a very. At the
Windows phone, but
I
think they would get over it though.
Speaking as somebody who runs a development shop, not a lot of demand there. So,
yeah.
Oh, okay. So maybe that one developer get pissed off.
Yeah, that one guy is going to be pretty cheesed off. So,
yeah, well.
No, but it should be an interesting talk, and we really do have some very interesting stuff planned for the event. So hopefully you can make it. Tickets are on sale now. You know the spiel. So.
Yeah.
All right.
So thanks very much, guys. I'm going to hop off and let you do your thing.
All right, buddy.
Lovely elevator portico here, and go see what's happening at DevFest.
So. Sounds great.
See you guys.
Thanks for jumping on, buddy.
Yep.
Thanks,
Bill.
Bye.
Okay.
See ya.
Bye. All right. Well, I have been following a story that I see that you stuck a link in here, Tim, about don't panic, but that public Wi-Fi is coming from inside your house.
Yeah, do you have it switched on your connection?
I have a guest network, but I'm not
right,
running.
But you don't
I'm
have
not,
the official.
I'm you're, not running,
so you're not running the Comcast router.
I'm not running the Comcast router. I've got my own internal stuff, but I run a guest network in here, but it's password protected. But it's easy to give out the password. But then everybody on the guest network's on a separate subnet. So that's really the whole pitch here from Comcast's perspective, is the fact that they're doing this. And oh, by the way, everybody's on a separate subnet that comes in through the public Wi-Fi. So your internal network is protected, provided you have firewalls set up and so on, I'm sure. But what about your bandwidth use? You know, or somebody doing something through your router, you know, that's illegal.
Well, if it's on the public side, it's not your problem. But yeah, those are concerns. But you could always just turn the thing off if you were worried about that.
Yeah, but you know what? Most people don't know how to do that. That's the problem. I mean, my aunt and uncle, they're in their early 80s, and my aunt is pretty computer savvy. She's got a nice MacBook and all that. And Xfinity came out and hooked up a new router for her, new wireless router, set the whole thing up. And then she said, you know, if you have a chance, just stop by at some point in the next week or so and just make sure everything is set up correctly and all that. And I said, well, you know, I can come this afternoon. I went over there that afternoon. Turns out he set it up without a password.
Ah.
So not only did it have the default admin password, but it didn't have a password for the network. And it was one of those head slap moments where I thought, seriously? So I would hope that they have their act together with respect to rolling this out. You know, the thing is, in this article, they do link to phone, FON.com. And Fonera is this pretty interesting, you know, phone is huge in Europe. And if you join it and you're part of the club, not only do you put your own public hotspot up, but you can go and use any public Wi-Fi. that's generated. So you don't have to war drive and find somebody that forgot to password protect their network. And I'm just wondering if it's going to catch on here.
No.
You don't think so?
Nope.
Okay.
And I don't think it really matters because, you know, mobile data is pretty fast. So,
true.
You know, it's, I think that, you know, and everyone pretty much has it, you know, that has the need or inclination to use their computing devices, you know, mobily. And, you know, even if you don't have that, you could go to any number of Starbucks anywhere in the country and get your free Wi-Fi there, you know?
Right.
So I don't see it as a huge problem. They don't have that analog in Europe like the Starbucks. I mean, they have Starbucks, but I don't think they have the free Wi-Fi in every country, you know, exactly the same way. So they don't have an analog like we have, which is, you know, hey, let's find a Starbucks or you know, or whatnot. So I don't think it's a huge problem here, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, I just have to throw something in because it was a little bit of a revelation. So, you know, AT&T has rolled out a new program for iPhones. I should say not iPhones, smartphones. A new family plan. So you can have unlimited talk and limited text. You can all share the same data network plan. They've actually dropped the cost of smartphone surcharge from $40 a phone down to $15. So I went through and I analyzed the whole thing and tried to figure out, does it make sense for us as a family to switch? So I added up all of our monthly bills. I added up all of our data usage. And our data usage came up with an average of 16 gigs a month for four iPhones. And the bill, we would have saved $300 a year on our bill, but we would have had to give up our unlimited data. And we would have had to switch to this new plan, this AT&T Next, where you pay a monthly fee for your phone versus the subsidized phone. And right. It just didn't make sense. So we ended up not doing it.
Yeah, those of us that are grandfathered in with unlimited data, you know, we look at those new plans and go, no, I don't think so.
They want us to die, Graham.
They do. They're trying to force us to switch. And, you know, I'm not going to. I haven't seen anything that would make me do it yet.
No, but to your point, Tim, that the LTE network is just so doggone fast.
Yeah.
That it just makes...
So why do you need to have shared Wi-Fi, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a nice feature, nice option to have available, but I don't think it's as of a big deal as it is in Europe, where you don't have this ubiquity of public Wi-Fi or 4G networks. I mean, I don't think they've even started to roll those out yet. They're
still
all in 3G. Yeah, they're all in 3G still.
Okay. Yep. Well, and plus the fact, you know, even though the European Union was supposed to be the panacea for making it easy to move from country to country and do things, you can't do it with your mobile plan, you know. And in fact, people that live on the fringes of countries have issues. My friend John's sister lives in France outside Paris, and she gets signals from two different countries. And she has to be very careful that she's not inadvertently connecting to the wrong country, because of course then she'll be paying roaming rates.
Well, a lot of people in Europe have multi-SIM phones, so dual SIM phones, and then they have multiple carriers.
Yeah,
and so that's if you're working in the UK and you're going to France often, you'll need two SIMs to like switch back and forth.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, hey, that new co-working space in Edina, they're pairing up with the Dunn Brothers.
Yeah, I was in there yesterday. That place is nice. Have you swung by there yet?
Haven't been inside. No, Cafe Incorporated.
You know where it is, though, kind of in Pentagon Office Park, just east of 100 on West 76th.
I used to office there a year, you know, decades ago.
Yeah, well, this is a new building that's almost right on 100.
Oh, yeah.
A condo building with retail space on the main floor, and they took the largest piece of that. And turns out the same owners are behind both the new Dunn Brothers concept. Apparently, they're a franchisee of that new concept, which is very nice. And then they have the co-working space next door to it, which is outfitted, I mean, like totally first class, high tech, really, really nicely designed, you know, architecturally designed. And it was quite impressive. They're having an open house. It's a grand opening event Thursday from 4 to 7. Unfortunately, it kind of overlaps somewhat with mini demo, but I was going to stop in at about 4 on Thursday and check it out. They're signing up members. They have kind of a weird menu of membership services, but you don't have to be a member to go like reserve a conference room there. Anybody can, which
it
I
looks
guess
like
is...
You can pay a la carte for a day. So if I wanted to go in there, you could like pay for a day? Is that true? 25. Or do you have to like...
Yep, $25. And
really?
Yeah, and anybody can reserve these very nice conference rooms. I think four, eight, or 12-person conference rooms. And I mean, they're wired with, you know, large flat screen, you know, monitor and wall-mounted. You know, I mean, it's an impressive... looking venture. And it's, you know, the guy who founded August Technology, Odell, is that his name?
Yes.
He's Steve behind Odell. This thing. And they raised angel, funding to launch this venture. And if you read Kathy Grayson's story, which I guess just hit yesterday in the Business Journal, they're talking about putting these all over the Twin Cities.
Well, it would make perfect sense because it's, there really is an acceleration in not only startups and people that are free agents, if you will.
Yep.
But even small businesses that have reached their limit in their spaces and yet they have to keep hiring new people. I've got actually two clients that have done exactly that, and they're trying to find places and they're actually subletting space in others' offices within their buildings,
yeah,
just to house people. And they, you know, and so they're remote anyway. Yes, they can walk down and so forth, but they're perfect for co-working.
Yep. Oh yeah. It's a big deal. And, this trend and these guys apparently have been planning this for a long time and, you know, looked at that space, which was sitting idle for a long time. I don't know if you remember, but that building sat empty after the 2008 financial crash and real estate crash. I guess, the original developers defaulted on it. It went into foreclosure. The bank owned it for years and it sat there empty, you know. The condos and the retail. And finally, a new owner came in. The general manager was telling me yesterday, bought the thing and started signing leases. And now it looks like it's full. In fact, the parking lot was full when I went in there practically. And I thought, whoa, you know, that could be an issue, parking. but anyway, it's very nice. And, you know, they offer you a free day just for coming in and doing a tour. And they even give you like a $5 coupon to use next door at this coffee. Well, it's more in the coffee shop. It's a deli and a wine bar. They have wine and beer.
See, I think this is just
brilliant.
Well,
I'm all over this. I'm going to meet you there, Cam.
Well, yeah. And they have, you know, we'll put a link in the show notes to Cafe Inc., and their memberships and so forth. You know, they got a Flex one for nights and weekends. They've got a Pro, and that's $49. And they got a Pro for $169. You have unlimited access. And then an executive level at $299, which also gives you a bunch of conference room points, because I'm assuming you have to pay for the conference room.
Right.
That's
right.
A la carte.
And they're really cool. They have tablets mounted on the wall outside the conference room, so you can walk right up and reserve them. Or you can do it online. And I said, you mean if you're a member? And he said, well, no, anybody can go to their site and reserve one from a distance, I guess. Oh. Or you just call up the concierge.
Right.
You know, and do it over the phone. So they seem to have their act together. And I mean, there's, you know, I live just kitty corner across 494 from there. So I thought, I got to go check this place out. You know, I really don't need another co-working membership. I love Coco. I love going to Grain Exchange once a week. And sometimes I can't even get in there. That's my membership once a week. Sometimes I can't even get in there, you know, but I try to, and I enjoy it every time I go there. You run into somebody you'd never otherwise run into, you know. But you know, I may hang out at this place, but you know what the problem is? I don't want that $49 nights and weekends. I'm not going to be going and doing co-working in the evening. It's open till 10, but that $49 a month just lets you go in there between 5 p.m. and 10 p.m. or all day Saturday, all day Sunday. Well, I don't need that. So, and then I don't need the pro for $169 a month. That's too much. So I need something in between. But what I'll use it for is maybe just occasional meetings where I need a conference room. You know,
yeah, but you could just pay $25 every time you wanted to work there.
Yeah. Yeah. If you just want to get the hell out of the house, or, you know, if your family's got company over and you just need a place to go, it's very nice. And I'll tell you, I'll go in there to that coffee shop and meet people there, because I'm kind of sick of going to the Caribou over at the 8,000 tower. You know, I feel like I'm overusing the place, you know. But so it's another place to hang out, and it's very nicely appointed. So anyway, yeah, and the general manager's name is Chet Funk, and he's just a young guy. Guy looks like he's about 28. I couldn't believe it. Huh. You know, so
well, you know, the having networks of co-working facilities is going to be huge, so that you can go anywhere. Because you know, I've got a bunch of clients in St. Paul. And when I go over there, I'll meet them at a coffee shop. And how great would it be to just meet them at a co-working facility to minimize their commute, just go over there and work for the day.
Yeah, yeah. So speaking of St. Paul, I hear there's room available now at downtown St. Paul. You know, LeadPage has moved in there. Did I tell you guys that?
No.
LeadPage was a virtual company right up until they got their $5 million Series A. So they finally said, oh, I guess we should get some office space. So they're over at the St. Paul Lower Town Coco. But I heard other people moved out of there and went to Uptown. So there is space available over there. And that place is going to get really popular when that light rail station, when the line is fully open. They're testing it right now. But, you know, that light rail station is right there in front of it. So I have no doubt that, all the Cocos are extremely popular. And I don't, you know, they'll never say they're at total capacity, but there's no shortage of people that want to do co-working. You're exactly right about that.
Well, so I'm wondering about my buddy Doug Olson, who is in the Azure space at Microsoft. He's a big deal development manager of some kind. I forget what his title is, general manager or something.
Which means he's like executive level.
Well, right? Yeah, he's probably, reports. I think he's three levels down from Ballmer's, and now Satya Nadella. And, but because
he must have worked with Nadella though, because he ran that whole business.
Well, yeah, I'm just wondering how he knows him. And
I'm sure he worked for him, or you know, was at least you know work for the someone that worked with him.
Yep. Oh, sure, yeah.
You know.
Yep. Yeah.
So what's your point about Doug?
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, what this means for him and how he's doing. And I shot him an email, and you know, just to ask him how things are going and what this means for him. But I also told him I'm going to buy the stock now. And that's huge for me. That's huge for me because.
So why are you going to invest? What do you see about the change at Microsoft?
Because no matter what, let's just take the thing that was being discussed earlier about having a platform to do integration of the Internet of Things, for example. Let's just talk about that for 2 seconds. There are a lot of companies already that have rolled out platforms for that integration and for app development and with APIs and everything else. And but there isn't anybody that can do it at the level that a Microsoft could and come in and virtually own it. I mean, they know the partnering well, they know all the hardware well, and the hardware vendors and all that, and they could really move fast.
Well, Microsoft is really good at the cloud, and as Apple shows, it's not easy to do.
Right.
And, you know, they are supporting a lot of developers who do iPhone development with their, you know, their back-end services right now. So they could well become this glue in the cloud that this runs on, you know, on top of all the operating systems.
Yep.
And I think that would be a very good business to be in, and they could make a lot of money doing that.
Well, yeah, Amazon can't own it all, you know. I mean, there's got to be room for others.
Yeah. No, I think it's a Microsoft and Google kind of game there.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
So, you know, I think it's going to be really interesting to see what kinds of changes that Nadella does. Because of the relationship that he's got with Bill Gates, who's coming back on sort of to be an advisor.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, in a lot of ways, him coming back on an advisor in an advisory capacity is like Steve Jobs coming back, because you just know that when Gates says go do this, it's going to happen.
Speaking of Steve Jobs, when you said you're going to buy Microsoft, I thought Steve just turned over in his grave.
Nah.
I mean, you're not selling Apple to buy Microsoft.
Well, actually, I had to divest myself of a bunch of Apple because the percentage of my portfolio was way too heavily in Apple. And if Apple stubbed their toe, I was screwed. I had to.
But with Steve, a strike, Apple is working on some really great stuff.
They are, according to Tim Cook, yes, and they're buying back stock and doing stuff. Well, I still have too much stock, but you know, I forget what the old adage is about pigs getting slaughtered or hogs getting slaughtered if they try to get every nickel out of a stock. You know, in terms of capital gains, and so I forget what the quote is, but
I've heard it.
It's that's kind of how I feel about Apple, because I got so much with a strike price of $33. You know, it's like, okay, well, yeah, I'd like to hang on and have it be $1,000 stock or $1,500 stock and all that, but you know, what if it's a $200 stock in a year or 2 years?
Well, you still know, make some money off of it.
Well, of course.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen, but
no. Well, what do you guys think of this new CEO?
I think it's a good choice. We'll really see if this is a good choice in, you know, a year or two to see what he really does that's different from what Ballmer was doing. So it'll be interesting to see if he does do some wildly different things and they try to break out of this, you know, Windows running on everything sort of paradigm that was clearly Ballmer's strategy that hasn't worked.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Windows runs great on PCs and they still have a good position there, but you know, Windows 8 has been not successful. The idea of running one operating system across all devices is a great vision, but in reality, it doesn't work very well. So, you know, I think that if he comes in and says, okay, Windows 9 is going to be sort of like an updated version of Windows 7, and they, you know, just do something very different in the mobile space than what they're doing now, then they've got a chance of being very relevant, because they are a big company that makes a lot of money still. So they're not in, you know, it's not like they're in the death throes like Apple was when Steve Jobs came back.
No, precisely.
You know, they've got lots of options.
By the way, did you guys see the, I'm sorry, Graham, you go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, when you look at the stock chart under Ballmer, it won't be very hard for this guy to look better than that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I know.
I mean, he was a colossal failure for the stock. There's no arguing that. Yeah. When you look at it under Gates, I mean, it's a wonderful stock chart, obviously, but you know, so the new guy's gonna if he can't do better than Ballmer, wow. He's really bad.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I just howled when I not howled, but I chuckled when I read the Borowitz report. Gates spends entire first day back in office trying to install Windows 8.1.
Oh, was that a joke or was real?
No, it was a satire.
I figured it had to be.
Well, yeah. They had to add satire in the link or something. But at any rate, yeah, it was just that apparently he was swearing and, you know, he had to restart the machine. And Microsoft spokesman said that Mr. Gates' first day on his new job had been a learning experience and that for the immediate future, he'd go back to running Windows 7. I just howled. Oh, God, man. That was great. Anyway.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch him be involved again. Taking away time from all the philanthropy stuff, I guess. He's got a whole venture firm that works on all that stuff, you know, investing in new, you know, health related, you know, fighting malaria and AIDS and everything. And there's a cast of probably hundreds of people that are behind him on all that.
Yep. Well, at the same time, all this other stuff's going on, you know, there's buzz about Apple having a new, Apple TV platform and really doing a lot of stuff, but this Google Cast software development kit, what's this all about, Tim?
Well, they've opened up the Chromecast so that third-party developers can now build this into their apps. And I'm sure that we're going to see a lot more, Chromecast-centric apps that will be available on both iOS and Android.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that it'll prove that the Google Chromecast will be a very popular, addition because of all the app support. So it'll be interesting to see how long it takes before, you know, we actually see some apps take advantage of this. I thought we would see a flood right away because a lot of apps have already built this in, you know, because they've had this out for a while to developers. So I was hoping to see some this week with like my favorite podcasting app, Pocket Cast, but I haven't seen it added yet. But something like that, you know, we'll see a number of new apps and probably some stuff that, you know, we haven't seen before because it is such a low cost platform and now they've kind of opened it up. So,
well, this is good news. If you guys remember the Boxee, Boxee.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I got really excited about Boxee and I watched the videos they did in New York about the courting developers about where they were going with the platform and you could add your app, you know, you could create your own TV channel and create an app, right?
But you can do that on Roku, and that's been the secret to their success.
That's where I was going. Yep.
Very easy to do Roku app.
But now, when you look at this and their ability to have their cloud platform called YouTube connected behind this, now it changes everything.
Everything. It's going to make it a very, very popular device. It's already popular because it's inexpensive and it can play Netflix and Hulu, you know.
Right.
But once we have, you know, all the streaming apps support it, it's basically a $35 way to add smart TVs to every dumb TV you have.
Yes. You know? Mm-hmm. Well, what was interesting to me though, was that when I went into a Best Buy, I don't know, 2 months ago, and they had them in stock. And I started to look at it, and I realized on the left side of my fireplace, I've got my home theater area set up. And so, you know, the Blu-ray player and the TiVo and the Apple TV all plug into my receiver that has 6 HDMI inputs. And then there's an HDMI cable that runs under the floor to the right side of the fireplace up in the bookshelf. and that's where the HDTV is. And so the display, the TV acts as just a dumb display. But the only way I could get Chromecast to work would be to plug it into the TV.
And then, you can plug it into an AV receiver if you have an open HDMI port. So if one of those six is open, you can just plug it right into the AV receiver. That'd probably be the best way to do it, because you probably could, you'd have access to power, where not every TV has a USB port for power.
Yeah, but the kicker is then how do you control it?
Via your iPhone or your iPad.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
So it's
I should
very
give it
easy
a shot because it's so cheap.
Yeah. No, it's we have one. It's a very good system. It's very easy to use.
Yeah.
So how long have the Google Chromecast apps for iOS been available?
Since the launch. But the problem has been that they only had a few apps, and the Google Play Store wasn't one of them. And that's been a fairly recent addition, but you could always do YouTube, Netflix, or Hulu. From day one, they worked on both iOS and Android. So now it's pretty much equivalent across the platforms. And I think we're going to see that, on both sides, unless Apple, doesn't approve Chromecast apps for some reason, but they've already approved the first party ones from Google. So
yeah.
I can't imagine they're going to get in the way.
Yeah. Cool.
Anyway.
Well, did you guys see that story about, that was done by Richard Engel from NBC about visitors to the Sochi Olympics are going to be hacked? All they have to do is just open their phone, turn their phone on, or open their computer, and they're hacked.
I saw it on the news. Yeah, it was on the news this week.
Well, okay, so I saw the story initially, saw the video, I should say, and watched the video that was posted online because somebody had linked to it. And so I watched the video, and I said, wait a minute. And, like on the Mac, you've got built-in protection for apps you download. So things can't automatically, Safari set up so that it won't automatically open up PDFs or zip files and so forth. You have to explicitly make that change.
Right. And, so they had opened up a honeypot on all of these devices, basically. So they turned off all of the protection that Android gives you out of the box, and as well as the Mac gives you out of the box. And yeah, of course, if you're going to do stuff like that, and if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to get hacked no matter where in the world you are. You don't have to be in Russia.
You could be sitting in
a diner, and you're going to get hacked.
Yeah. Well, and then it turns out that even the security guy that was featured in this piece that set everything up is doing a humma humma, and he's backing off the story because, he's saying, yes, Richard Engel explicitly downloaded the Android app. For malware. And, he's really backing off quickly. It's a story they should retract.
Yeah. Yeah. It was obviously done just for, to scare people and to say how bad Russia is.
Yeah.
Where,
and why?
In this case, Russia is just as bad as, anybody else.
Right.
And yeah, the hackers could happen to come from Russia, but they could be coming from China or from South America. They could be coming from no matter, doesn't really matter what country they're coming from.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one guy on Twitter said, has anybody seen this story, uninitiated drive-by download on Android? I'd like to see more details. And the security guy, Kyle Wilhoit, said it was definitely not uninitiated. That was part of the TV magic. And so he's talking about the editing, and unfortunately, the editing got the best of the story, cut out a lot of the technical context details out. This is why I've got an older sister that doesn't shop online. She's just freaked out. And I said, wait, whoa. Let me just walk you through the three things that you need to do to be careful. She goes, no, I'm not going to do it. So she doesn't bank online. She doesn't do anything online that she has to put a credit card in.
The first thing you should tell her is stop watching NBC. I mean, do these people need more trouble? I mean, their ratings are so bad. And then what did they do last week? The only show where they're the ratings winner, they fired the guy. Jay Leno.
Yeah.
I mean, what, how, you know, what part of brain dead don't you understand when it comes to NBC? Well, I mean, unbelievable.
It's all about the future. That's what they, that's what they're trying to position themselves for. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, NBC News is not even on my radar to be, you know.
Yeah. Well, I get my, I get too much news elsewhere. I mean, with,
yeah, tell me
with
about
the
it,
apps
yeah.
and with Feedly and everything else. I mean, I pretty much see just about everything I think that's worthwhile. And so, anywho.
Well, you know, what's distressing is whenever there's a story like this, you know, people that know me, they always will bring this up. And it's just, I don't know, I'm like a broken record to say, you know, this is stuff is just distortions, you know, to scare people.
Yeah.
And it's not really, you know, and the truth is out there. So you can always go out and find on the internet someplace, you know, whatever point of view you want and triangulate the story.
Yep.
So
that's for sure.
So don't believe everything they're pushing you, I guess is what I have to say.
That's the truth.
No kidding.
Especially bloggers. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, especially Graham. Especially tech surf blog. Don't go
actually,
there.
Actually, in surveys, bloggers come out with a very high credibility rating. People believe bloggers more than they believe the traditional media now. I've seen that time and again. So
they're more truthful probably than the traditional media people.
Yep.
All right. Yeah. So I'll see you guys at Mini Demo this week.
Oh yeah.
If I can get a ticket. Yeah, I'm gonna have to just step up and get a sponsored ticket or something.
Well, Phil got tickets for you, didn't
no,
he?
But it never no, but it never came by email, and then they sent out this apology email saying, oh, we screwed up and so sorry.
I got one right in Eventbrite.
I'll have to go look. Okay.
Well, sign into Eventbrite and see if it's there. It was in mine.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
Or you could use mine because Phil got me one and I didn't need one because I'm a community supporter already.
Wow. Okay. So you could attend this Graham Thickens.
So I got two tickets.
Sweet.
Anyway.
Okay.
Well, so what's this? So Graham, what's this Coco Google Happy Hour deal?
You know, I haven't looked at that in a while, but it's a contest to go to the national event, right? And it's only open to COCO members, but you can become a member and go pitch. Unfortunately, it's a Friday night and I'm going to be out of town, so I'm going to miss that sucker. But you get a shot at going to sunny Silicon Valley to pitch Google Ventures and investors from other prominent VC firms. But first, you have to participate in COCO Pitch Night on Friday, February 21st, where only five startups will demo their product or service. So you need to apply and you need to describe what problem you're trying to solve and what traction you've had and what's your plan for financial success, you know?
Nice.
So it's still open to apply. I don't know when they're going to shut that off.
That's good to see, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It'll be a good event. I'm sorry I'm going to have to miss it. But
no,
it'll
okay.
be at, I believe it's going to be at the Grain Exchange COCO, I suspect, although I didn't note which COCO it's going to be at. But anyway, you'll find out if you go to the link.
Sounds great. And then the other thing that'll be on here that's new is the Thai Minnesota chapter, the fourth annual Entrepreneurs Workshop.
Yeah, they do that out at the you know, the Fort Snelling facility, the Boy Scout camp thing. Have you ever been to that funky big kind of event space?
A couple times actually. Yeah.
Yeah, and the only thing is they haven't announced any details on this yet. I'm sure it's going to be coming soon, but they tend to do it from like 4 to 8 or something like that in the afternoon. And they told me Wednesday the 19th was the date. When Phil and I ran into him the two main organizers of the local chapter, Phil and I ran into him at that Muse event that where Bring Me the News, you know, was involved a couple weeks ago.
So. Well, they must have just posted this, but it's up on Eventbrite. So put a link in here in the show notes.
Yeah, do that. It's strangely, it's not on the Time Minnesota chapter website. but everybody does things by Eventbrite these days anyway. So
yeah, well, actually, they've got a they just stuck it on their homepage. I bet you they did it this morning.
Oh, just missed it then.
Yeah. So it's here. So that's good.
Yeah.
All right.
I think it's a wrap.
All right. Thanks, guys. And thanks, everybody, for listening to
the Minivate Gang podcast.
Right. Yeah. 252. Care.